With the anniversary of the Manson murders and the popularity of films like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, our cultural fascination with cults has never been clearer. Are these cultic narratives more than just pieces of news or entertainment? Can they teach us about the place of truth within the distortions of our current political moment? In his new book, Losing Reality on Cults, Cultism, and the Mindset of Political and Religious Zealotry, National Book Award-winning psychiatrist, historian, and public intellectual Robert J. Lifton proposes a radical idea that the psychological relationship between extremist political movements and fanatical religious cults may be much closer than anyone thought. Again, the name of the new book is Losing Reality, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Robert J. Lifton to the roundtable this morning. Robert, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be with you.
Subtitle of the book on cults, cultism, and the mindset of political and religious zealotry. This is something, in one way or another, that you obviously have been thinking about. I'm curious as to what ultimately brought you to this particular project.
Well, it was a series of experiences. And when I did my stint as an Air Force psychiatrist in the military, my last assignment, and this was back in the 1950s, my last assignment was with returning prisoners of war who had been subjected to what we call, what the Chinese call, thought reform or so-called brainwashing at the hands of the Chinese communists. And from that assignment, I became extremely interested in this process and in anything that tried to control the human mind. And then I did a more systematic, serious study by interviewing people who came out of China, both foreigners and Chinese. And doing that, I developed a sense that I could apply psychological principles to large historical events such as these. And that's been my effort all through my work over the years.
Give us a sense of how you define and what you think psychological extremism is.
Well, psychological extremism, I call it human zealotry. It has to do with all or none sets of beliefs and claims to virtue. And at first I thought it was divided into two areas, a political area like Chinese thought reform, which came from an extreme Maoist ideology that was highly political, that was one form, and another form was the cultic form in which extremist religious cults created their own community that was, or sub-community that was walled off from the rest of the world and had an all-knowledgeable guru who created his or her reality. But over time, I came to realize that these two tendencies are part of the same thing. They're much more similar than different. And that really was brought home to me when a group of young people struggling with their situation in extremist religious cults here in the United States picked up on a chapter I'd written in my book on Chinese communism, Notorious Chapter 22, and made it a kind of underground document, which they circulated and used for their so-called deprogramming. And here was something I concluded from a study of Chinese thought reform taking place geographically at the other end of the world and with the most different kind of group. That was, in a sense, related to systematic experiences of control which young people had in cults in this country. And I was amazed at this process in which they came to me with my own chapter. And that, in a sense, made very clear the relationship between the two, between what I had called political extremism and others too, and then cultism. And so I came to use the word cultist for both of them and their similarities. And my book is very much about that, along with other aspects of zealotry.
So allow me the moment to introduce our audience to the elephant in the room, and that is Trumpism, which you talk about in this book in applying your concept of malignant normality to Trumpism and to the president and his efforts. So talk about that and how that comes to bear in this discussion.
It comes very much to bear in this discussion. This is not a book about Trump per se, though he has an important part in the book. It's a book about those who seek to own reality, but it's a book of the Trump era. I don't think I would have written this book had not Trump evolved so strong a tendency toward malignant normality and so strong an effort toward owning reality. Trump has a kind of what I call solipsistic reality. And what that means very simply is reality that comes only from the self, his self, or what the self sees, needs to see, wants to see, with absolutely no responsibility for others' criteria of truth or criteria of evidence of truth. Now, I came to the idea of malignant normality, not surprisingly, from my study of Nazi doctors, so that in Nazi Germany, the doctor who stood at the ramp in Auschwitz and selected Jews for the gas chamber wasn't acting on his own. He was carrying out what was expected of him. He was doing his job. This was the malignant normality of Nazi Germany. Trump's malignant normality may not be that extreme, but it's disturbing enough. His malignant normality includes this kind of solipsistic reality that I mentioned, which includes both falsehoods and lies. Lies when he is aware of manipulating and falsifying events, and simply falsehoods when he believes in them combines that belief with his manipulation. And it's an important question that people want to know: does he really believe in his lies? And the answer is that the individual psyche, I have learned in my work, is convoluted enough potentially to both believe and not believe in something. Trump can partly believe in the falsehoods that he lays out, and in a way, one can't be too effective with falsehoods unless one believes in them, at least partly, and be partly aware at the same time that they are false. And when he's aware that they're false, he's simply telling a lie. But it's not either or, it's both occurring at the same time. And I think a good example of that came from very early in his transgressions, the false idea that Barack Obama was not born in the United States.
Mm. You write in the chapter, Trump does not directly express an apocalyptic narrative, but his presence has an apocalyptic aura. So, and then you make the point of and you say, yes, he calls himself a very stable genius. So from that, it gives you that sense that he does not directly express this narrative.
Well, he doesn't. The thing about Trump is, or one thing about him is, he doesn't have any clear ideology. His ideology changes according to convenience and according to his solipsistic reality. But he does continue with his malignant normality, and his malignant normality comes to define much of what our general culture is going through. For instance, I've been interested, even since I wrote the book, in the last few weeks, about the relationship of reality and impeachment. And one of the advantages of the impeachment procedure is that it confronts the realities that have been confused by Trump and his followers in the society. In order to develop the materials of impeachment and the articles of impeachment, one has to confront the falsehoods and the lies and state the truth. And prior to this, the whole society has been thrust into something like a reality disorder in which so many people in our society are deeply confused about what truth is or what it means to really know something, as George Will once put it. And in this way, the act of impeachment of Trump is a way of confronting this near reality disorder of the whole society, and it's therapeutic for the whole society in doing so. And in that way, a return to reality is a struggle that goes side by side or as part of the impeachment procedure. And it's a very difficult one because this partial reality disorder may be at the center of Trump's legacy and also the most difficult part of his legacy to overcome, because certainly our efforts to overcome it are bound to be imperfect and partial, but nonetheless extremely important.
You have a very sobering paragraph at the end of that chapter on Trump. All of this suggests not only that Trump and the new social media are made for each other, but also that the problem will long outlive Trump's brief but all too long moment on this historical stage. So we have to come to terms with this then.
Yes, very much so. And on Trump's relationship to an apocalyptic narrative, he doesn't have, as a person without an ideology, he doesn't have a careful narrative about his apocalyptic presence. But what he does do is imply that by saying that only he really understands what goes on in society better than generals or other politicians or anybody, and therefore only he can fix it. Those are the words of a would-be savior. They are also the words of one who seeks to control reality, to own reality, and this is what we must confront. And I also talk in my book about the cultic element to Trump's movement. It's not simply a cult in the sense of the Moonies or Aum Shinrikyo in Japan, but there are cultic elements in the chanting of his audience. Build the wall, who will pay for it? It's a kind of pseudo-religious chant back and forth. And many of his devout survivors offer themselves the way that followers do to an omniscient guru who promises for them a kind of perfection and immortality. And his most intense followers bring to Trump something like that. But that doesn't mean it will be that way forever.
The final chapter in your book is The Ray of Sunshine, if there is such a thing, and that is regaining reality. And you say we have a historical model for combating malignant normality. Tell us about that model and your optimism that it can be employed here.
Well, in all of my work has taken up egregiously destructive events, including the Nazi doctors and including Chinese thought reform, including the Vietnam War and including the Hiroshima bombing. But in all of my work, I also look to see what alternative possibilities are. So I call it Holocaust and transformation. And here, the transformation out of this cultist behavior is related to what I call the protean self, and I mean a collective version of the protean self, not one person. And the protean self is named after a Greek sea god, Proteus, whom we all know about as a notorious shapeshifter. And what I mean by the protean self is a self that can change, that can transform, that can have odd combinations and be resilient rather than be stuck in absolutism or zealotry, which so much of this book is devoted to. And that proteanism can also be grounded. And we're seeing some of that taking shape. The book I wrote just before this one is called The Climate Swerve. And the swerve idea has to do with a shift in consciousness. It's been used by thinkers ever since Lucretius, a shift in consciousness that is significant and not fully expected. And we've had a shift in a good sense in consciousness in relationship to climate threat. With a large majority of American people recognizing it and seeking to take appropriate steps in relation to it. So the protean self here has to do with collective resilience, collective proteanism, an alternative to the narrow containment of cultism. And I see that now in the struggle that's taking place, even in the recent impeachment proceedings, where people who are concerned about reality and who are members of institutions that they care about, who are institutionalists, such as people who work in the State Department or in our various intelligence agencies, are intense on telling the truth, whether it's whistleblowers or informants from those agencies. These are the advantages we have as a democracy, and the combination of our existing institutions, although they are under great distress coming from the attacks of Trump, nonetheless they exist. And when one brings a collective proteanism, collective versions of what I'm calling the protean self to them, we have a very good chance of sustaining them and sustaining our democracy. And that's the struggle we're in the midst of right now. And optimism is too strong a word, but certainly I feel hopeful about our outcome because I do have faith in the strength of our institutions and of certain guardians of them, and we're seeing this strength and authenticity right now and building on it, and I think we'll continue to do so.
Robert J. Lifton is the author of the new book, Losing Reality, on Cults, Cultism, and the Mindset of Political and Religious Zealotry. The book is published by The New Press. Robert, thank you so much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you. Again, Losing Reality is the name of the book by Robert J. Lifton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.